And now, the number one audio program that helps you to hire, get hired, and soar higher in the Salesforce ecosystem. It's the Salesforce Career Show with Josh Matthews and Vanessa Grant.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to what is now Season 2, Episode 1 of the Salesforce Career Show. I'm your host, Josh Matthews. I run the SalesforceRecruiter.com. And my wonderful co-host, Vanessa Grant, is unable to join us this week, but she'll be back next week when we've got a special guest. So make sure you tune in next week, same bat time, same bat channel. We are here with some regularly awesome people like Fred Cadena and Peter Ganza. You guys know them from the show. They're regular panelists. We've got Jesse from my team listening. Casey is listening. We've got we've got Ty here. We've got Rob here. We've got a bunch of folks. And what we're going to do this show is just do a little bit of an Ask Me Anything or Ask Us Anything program. Okay. So no special guest. We've already done the year in review and expectations for 24. This is just our kickoff, like, let's get rocking. So let's do that. Let's do that right now. So go ahead. And if you have a question, raise your hand and I'll call on you. It's that simple. And we'll be greeted by me and our panelists. While we wait for that, let's go in and ask Peter how Peter's doing, how his holiday was. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Josh. It was actually really good compared to last year. I actually took some time off. Struggling. Well, I'm doing my own thing, right? You know the drill. So when there's some downtime, right, you get inspired, and it's not like there's anything else going on. Anyway, I did take a couple days off. It was actually more difficult than I thought, but in the end, it was what I needed. And actually did do quite a bit of work, and it totally paid off. I just had literally the first day of 2024 was my best start of any month, any year, any week. I just need every week.
That's amazing, buddy. Well, congratulations on kicking it off right. Big kudos to you. Let's get a little clap in the background. Oh, that ain't a little clap. That's not a little clap. That's a big applause. And Fred, we caught up just before we kicked off the recording here, but go ahead and tell us how your holiday was as well.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was relaxing. Didn't do much of anything. I think I hosted a holiday party for some local friends on the 16th. And then I'm the Slack community group leader here in Omaha. And I hosted a Slack and Salesforce holiday party that following Tuesday. And then I really didn't do anything for the last 2 weeks of December. So it was
incredible. Good for you, man. Well done. And that's what it's for. And we've got our friend Ty. What's up, Ty?
Hey, Josh. Happy New Year
to you.
Great audio. And I hope the tech gods will bless this space. I know Twitter is not perfect, and it's sometimes hit or miss.
Yeah, thanks, man. This is Tyler Zika. Are you still out in San Diego? Okay,
yes,
so I've known Ty for several years. Thanks for jumping on the show, as you do quite frequently. And yeah, we've been plagued with some tech issues. Most of them are my fault, quite honestly. I got a new iPhone 13 or whatever it is, 15. I don't even know what the model is. It a 15? Are the 15s out?
The 15s.
Oh, well, then that's what I've got. And then I pressed the wrong button. It's like, is this a headphone? I'm like, this isn't headphones, into my podcast machine. And then it just disregarded it. So that's what happened on the last program. But we've got that all well in hand right now. So Ty, you raised your hand. What would you like to talk about?
Hopefully not AI, but my question is related to AI. Josh, what is your feeling about how people are responding to it? I feel like there's some fatigue a little bit. As a developer and architect, there's just so many more ways to gather information now with it. And I just want to know your thoughts and maybe what you've heard from other people.
Yeah, no, that's sure thing. It's a really good point. I'll be honest, I haven't heard like too much feedback except for when people are piping up on this show or on Fred's show called Banking on Disruption, where we've talked about AI in the past too. What I can tell you that I've noticed is that there's only fatigue for bad AI, right? Like you guys heard me I don't know if it was like when we started recording or right before that, just sort of talking about travel and travel fatigue and, you know, how, you know, I wished it was the 80s. Like traveling was a lot nicer. Airports were easier. It wasn't as crowded. Like you just kind of like showed up, you know, sat down, got a hot meal. It was easy, right? We only get travel fatigue when things are shitty. And we get AI fatigue when AI is just not making, it's just not doing or communicating what it, whoever, you know, designed the thing to get across, right? Like good communication should always be good. Like it's inherent in good communication. In other words, if you're, and there's so much AI, right? We're not talking about image creation here, right? We're talking about like ChatGPT and Claude and Bard and some of these other things. When it's working well, my experience is it's seamless and you don't even notice it, right? That is hopefully what good AI should be. Like you don't know, right? It's like you don't want to hear the cooks yelling at each other in the kitchen when you're at a nice restaurant, right? It should be in the background. But the fatigue comes from the messaging. And I can tell you that I've definitely have like email fatigue, phone call fatigue, not from having meaningful conversations or meaningful emails, but the barrage of new AI related, oriented, created campaigns. It's like I can see it a mile away. I can just look at the format of the email and know there's nothing in there I care about or want to read. What do you think, Ty?
So I'm bringing this up because it's kind of, you mentioned communication, bad AI, not idealistic emails. Did you see the Jeff Bezos, Lex Fridman interview where he talks about how he likes to run meetings?
No, I didn't. Tell us.
I'm going to butcher it, but what I got from it is there was a segment where he talks about how he likes to run meetings and how he likes to communicate. And he basically, I think he said he pays somebody to like weeks in advance to prepare the memo. And he says he wants it to be like scripture. It's like the angels can sing off this memo. And so he invests in a medium that everyone in the meeting partakes of. And then they sit and they read it for 30 minutes. He treats a meeting like a study hall where everyone will read this memo. It might be 6 pages long. And then after that's done, they communicate. They have the awkward conversations, the clarifications. And that's what I'm wanting more as a developer architect is I'm seeing a lot of roles. It's kind of the same thing. There's a 12 email thread. There's multiple tickets, multiple teams. The meetings sometimes aren't as quality as I would like mm-hmm. them to be. And I'm wondering if what can we do to get rid of some of that noise? And maybe this is just unique to me, but I've been in the industry for about 8 years now, and it seems more it seems like it could be better.
Yeah, yeah, all excellent points. And what you described is Jeff Bezos's process for having a meeting is not unique to him. It's not invented by him by any stretch of the imagination, right? Reducing meeting time is critical for probably, I would say, everyone. It's just that there are too many idiots in the world that don't know how to pause for 2 hours and figure it out. Look, no offense, idiots, but come on, like it's stupid. So, you know, you have these long, long, long meetings or multiple meetings where a Slack message would have sufficed. I think people are often too looking for collaboration, and I'll scratch that, not collaboration, consensus. And consensus matters at times, but sometimes you need to be directive. You know, we're not having a democratic vote on what we're doing with this project. It's not whoever has the most hands up wins. And for that, you need a leader, right? So leaders need to step up. It's really the responsibility of the leaders to prepare people for the meeting, hold them accountable to the time. And if you watch Congress at work, they've figured that out. I'm not saying Congress works well, right? But they figured it out. You get this much time to say your point. So you better be prepared, right? So don't say what you can read quickly. I don't know about you, but I can read a lot faster than I can talk or listen. right? Actually, I can listen pretty fast too. But for the most part, most people can read a lot faster than they can talk. And then they can digest it. And especially if they're digesting it at least 24 hours beforehand, well, then they've processed it, meaning they've slept on it. We say slept on it for a reason, right? Your brain can organize some of that stuff, come up with fresh ideas. So if you want to make a change in this area for yourself, right, you know, you just start doing that for all of the meetings that you're organizing. And then the people that maybe you're reporting to or involved in can see that behavior and copy it, right? That's the goal, right? And then maybe you can run a class. Maybe you can do a little 30-minute session on highly effective meetings and just do that for the whole company or for your client or all of your clients. You could just shoot a little video, a 5-minute video. This is the key to successful meetings, and send that out to everyone that you're working with. So there's a lot of things that require just a few hours up front that will save you a lot of time down the road. I know Fred had his hand up, and he's, I'm sure, got something to say about this and AI, but what are your thoughts, Fred?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great discussion. I think that, yeah, separated from the AI piece of it, which is the level of like intentionality. And I'm familiar with Bezos's, you know, meeting structure. I think that it's not magic because of the rigidity. It's magic because it forces people to put preparation and intentional thought into a meeting, right? So, you know, his whole thing is like, no PowerPoints, you know, don't bring more than two pizzas worth of people into a conference room, right? If you have too many people in the meeting, you'll never get the consensus. And if you haven't like done the deep thinking about what you want people to make a decision on, you'll never get to.
So Fred, if we're going to have a meeting, yeah. That's a two pizza meeting, right? Just you and me.
That is it. But no, like, I think it's great. Like I think that, and I see this a lot in organizations that I've worked in, organizations I work with, the organizations I help, you know, there's so much meeting on the calendar that nobody really takes any time to prepare for meetings. One of the things that I think infuriates me, and maybe that's too strong a word, is when I get a meeting invite with a title and no agenda.
Yeah.
You know, that tells me that nobody's actually thought about what we're going to talk about in the meeting. And, you know, we're going to show up and kind of navel gaze and talk around the edges of a topic and then decide to reassemble for another hour. So, you know, I mean, I think sometimes a long narrative. I think Jeff Bezos's standard is 6 pages. I think that's, you know, a good tool to have in the toolbox, but just like anything else, you don't want to pull it out every single time. I think there's a place for PowerPoints. I think there's a place for other, you know, tools in a meeting, but the thread that I pull through the whole thing is, you know, be intentional, you know, prepare for the meeting. Don't have a meeting when a Slack message would do. Don't have a meeting when, you know, a quick email will do. I love that as a intentionality for the year.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, all that makes sense. And here's a little trick. Book your meetings for 10 minutes after. I mean, people aren't prepared. It's not because they don't want to be prepared. It's because they don't have time or it's not as important, right? I don't know about you, but most of my meetings run long. And, you know, it's just like, that's the reality of it sometimes. It's because I like to shoot the breeze and I burn up.
I was just saying, after recording with you on this show and on mine, that's so shocking that you're meeting.
What? 4-hour podcast tonight. So yeah, but if you book your meetings for 10 minutes after, guess what? Someone can go hit the John and they can come back, Google the thing that they were supposed to, read the agenda, make a couple bullet points. It's not like you've got to prepare a PowerPoint for every single meeting, right? I mean, maybe you do if you're in sales, and I don't know. But if you're just like having internal discussions with your colleagues, it shouldn't take, most meetings don't take you that long to prepare for. Anything else is called a project. Ty, other thoughts on this? I mean, it is a great topic. It's an efficiency question, right? Like, how do we be more efficient? You know, Winston Churchill was famous for having meetings last no longer than 20 minutes. I forget what the quote was, but it's like, you know, if you can't say what you need to say or learn what you need to learn in 20 minutes, like you're doing something wrong.
I more thoughts. I'm bringing it up because when I'm most productive is when a ticket is like a golden ticket and it has everything I need and I don't need to hunt for things and I can just crank out some code in a few hours, whatever needs to be done to change in the org. And I don't know a technical person who refuses a golden ticket. So I mean, it's hard to, I'll say this, when I've just been like a one man shop on a project and I can work directly with stakeholders, kind of offer the whole entire package from concept to production release, it works well. But I think that's in part just because I'm one person and there's less things getting lost.
Yeah, you're communicating with yourself as like a sort of old fashioned programmer analyst, right?
Well, communicating with myself and just being able to meet with like the stakeholders directly versus go through two or three people and those two or three people made the ticket. And then I'm just kind of stuck with, trying to, sometimes it's deciphering hieroglyphs sometimes because you're just trying to find the right keywords. I'll give one example. I was given this task to automate something and I read the entire PDF. It was only three pages, but there was nothing mentioned of the custom object that was a part of this whole process. And as a developer, like I need that to kind of know where to start. So I took a lot of notes and I had to dig through all the custom objects just to find the right one. And that's just like one teeny little thing.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about creating a template? You know, I mean, just something or like a follow-up. Thanks for your ticket, right? Like just an auto responder that says, if your ticket is missing this, that, the other thing, and XYZ, it will be delayed. If you would like to refresh your ticket, click here and input all accurate information necessary to getting done what you want done. I mean, can you do something like that?
I could. All my jobs, it's just been you hand me the work and I have to work with your ticketing system and how I need to show up and accommodate. I can't, I'm always hesitant when I start a new gig that like, okay, I'm here. You need to work with me and how I do everything. So I'm with you on making suggestions. I guess it's trying to figure out when should you make this suggestion versus you don't want to disrupt what maybe they've been doing for
a couple years. So look, I've got a little bit of experience with this. Not necessarily a lot of tickets. I worked in Jira for a little while, but that's about it. I know Fred's got a comment coming up here too. Okay. But look, there's this old thing that we say in sales, right? You tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them, right? And so having clear communication or even like a little contract or agreement that you can send out to your clients saying, look, this is how I can best serve you following these protocols. If you see anything here that is not in line with your current systems or protocols, now is the time to let me know so that we can navigate this. The clients that I've worked with in the past that have yielded, you know, where I've yielded the very best results, all follow these five basic principles of good communication related to tickets or projects or whatever. Like, I'm just riffing here. Okay. So you say other people in the past have been successful because of X, Y, and Z. Are you committed to X, Y, and Z? And if not, what won't you be able to commit to so that I know that up front we can figure out a workaround? So you say that when you sign them, right? Does that make sense, Ty? I mean, like this is communication stuff. Tell them again, and then you tell them what you told them. And then you can hold people accountable, right? Hey, stakeholder number one, do you remember on December 15th, I shared a document with you and you know, you responded and said that you'd read it. Do you remember that? Oh yeah, I remember that. Well, number three on that was X, Y, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've noticed two times now that that's not really happening. And I don't want this project to cost you more than it should. And I don't want it to be delayed longer than it should. So what can we do about this? You see what I mean? You actually get to hold them accountable to it. So it's literally no different than the whole meeting thing. Tell them what you're going to tell them. And then you have the meeting and then you send a follow-up email. This is what we covered. You tell them what you told them.
I'm gonna channel my inner Vanessa Grant since she's not on the call today, and just say like this is why there's a role of a business analyst, right? Like a lot of times, you know, business users, business stakeholders don't have the technical understanding of how a system works to give those types of details in a requirements document. And as a developer, as an architect, you don't want to spend the money to go through and do the research that somebody that is, you know, more on the business analysis side can do more efficiently than you can, right? And so, you know, to Josh's point, at the end of the day, right, it's a dollars and cents decision. You know, if they keep throwing the work over the fence to you to do at your rate, it's going to end up costing them more. And so it becomes a choice of, you know, do you guys want to do this? Do you guys want to keep paying me to do this, even though you're going to be paying me more than you could get somebody else to do it for? Or should we add somebody else to the team to do that business analysis work so that we all get more, you know, more efficiency out of the program? But, you know, just because you don't put somebody in to do the job doesn't mean the job doesn't need to be done. And business analysis is a key part of any development effort, whether it's, you know, a whole greenfield implementation or it's, you know, working through tickets.
You got that right.
You still need to understand the problem, right? You still need to understand the underlying issue and document it well. So
I feel you're and Ty, I mean, I guess, and to Fred's point, like, I guess it would work if you're actually billing hourly, but if you have caps on that, if it's like, okay, well, I got a project, it's 200 hours and you're burning all these other hours doing, you know, chasing people down, you know, then there's got to be a clause in the agreement for that. If you're actually bidding project-based work, never mind the hours, you're just saying, okay, this gig's 20 grand or 10 grand or whatever, 30 grand, 100 grand. Well, then you've got problems because every time there's an issue, that's eating into your profit. It's eating into your profit and it's eating into your time. So having that language early and often in agreements is really critical. Now, we did get a question. So thank you, Rob, for sharing this question. Happy to finish this conversation about this. And I'm kind of curious, before I jump into something, maybe I'm just being jumpy with too much coffee, but you tell me, Fred, anything else to share on this topic, or Ty, anything else that you'd like to talk about related to this topic?
Well, I think almost like every post I see on LinkedIn, the original question was raised with an AI context, but really wasn't about AI at all. At some point, whether it's this question or some other question before we finish, I would like to talk about like the what I would say the trough of disillusionment we're in right now with AI, because I think it's interesting. I think not that the market foretells everything, but you know, from a market perspective, all the darlings that were up last year on an AI bent. Have been down as the markets open so far this year. So I think that we are in a little bit of a trough of disillusionment on AI, and I think that would be an interesting thing to talk about. But I don't want to go there if there's other questions.
Yeah, and it's a good topic, ideally as long as it's related to careers, right? Because that's the focus here. So, you know, how are we disillusioned with AI, and how is that affecting our careers? How is that affecting our ability to get work, to find work, to succeed or excel? You know, I think that that's absolutely worthy. And we got a fun question from Rob. And Rob, I appreciate you sending this in. And that question is, let's get to it. What Salesforce conferences are you looking forward to in 2024? We can just kind of go round robin on this. All right, Ty, what is it?
Oh, do you want to focus on the conferences or?
Oh, I thought your hand, sorry, I had to switch screens. I thought you were raising your hand to answer that question. So yeah, for right now, we're going to cover conferences. Is there a conference that you're looking forward to? Cool.
You know, I'm ashamed to admit I've never even been to Dreamforce. I've never been to any Salesforce conferences. So I'm open to going one this year if anyone has a recommendation.
You know, there's a conference of shame that we could send you to. It's for everybody who's been working in the ecosystem for 8 years and has never attended one. Would you like a free ticket? The conference of shame. I like it. Sorry, making myself laugh. What about you, Fred?
You know, I'm working on my conference schedule at the moment. I have registered for TDX. I've actually never been to TDX before. Yeah. It the topics around TDX are more technical than what I deal with in most day to days, but I'm excited to go. I'm excited to see what it's all about. So I'll be there for that. I've got some new content that I'm putting out for several of the Dreamin', conferences. I hope to be selected to go back to Midwest and Florida Dreamin', as well as a couple of other Dreamin' conferences. Mile High, Cactus are both kind of on my list, and would be open to going to other ones. And then, of course, I can't wait to get back to Dreamforce. I really, Josh, appreciated all the work you did last Dreamforce in getting the media tent and networking events with other content creators together with Sir Conte, and hope that we can do something similar again this year. And then I had a separate party for my own podcast, which I look forward to hosting again.
That was so fun, by the way. That was so fun. I love rooftop. Beautiful day on the rooftop. It was wonderful.
Yeah, right in the shadow of Salesforce Tower. Could not have fallen into a better location. But yeah, I'm excited. I love hitting out on these conferences, just because they're a great way to reconnect with the network, build new connections, and just excited to jump into a new conference season.
Love it. What about you, Mr. Peter?
I'm not sure yet. So I've got one client that I'm going to get into that, and the one who actually sent me down for HLS streaming or life science streaming.
Yeah.
Wise Wolf. So we're going to get into that. I have some budget for it. I don't know what I'm going to recommend or which ones I may or may not go to. That's the most likely. And then I've got another client that's hopefully going to get there, like to the budgeting, planning, phase, but not at least not for another
there
month.
You go.
Dreamforce, hell no. And you'd have to listen to my podcast on why. There's just many reasons, and I'm not.
But Peter, that's your best opportunity all year to catch COVID. Like, why wouldn't you go?
Well, I feel like every neighbor I talk to and everybody around me is sick, and everyone got COVID for like the third time or the seventh time, and I haven't had it. We haven't had it. So I don't know. Like, am I missing out on something? I hear good things about this new JN.1 variant. I mean, anybody on the podcast had that?
I don't know anything about that. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you life sciences
people.
So what
you're saying is you don't want to drop $5,000 to hang out with 50,000 of your closest friends and then be in bed sick for the next 2 weeks.
Peter, you might have golden blood. You might have the cure to COVID.
Yeah, you might. You might.
You know what the golden blood is? It's I sit on my ass at home all day. I don't go anywhere. I'm not traveling.
Maybe we'll just send you to the conference of shame too. How about that?
Well, I mean, come on. I saw you down in Florida,
yes,
right? I gave you a big hug,
yes,
right? So I'll go if, like, let's say Wise Wolves, wants to send me, right? If someone pays for it. Hell yeah. But right now, okay, I had a phenomenal start to the year, the month, quarter, everything, all that kind of stuff. I'm not thinking that far ahead. But it's not something that I personally would budget for, because I don't get the ROI there.
Yeah.
Right? Dreaming events, that's where it's at, right?
Well, for some. I like all of them, but yeah.
Yeah, I love them all.
For some.
Yeah.
Ty, you got your hand up.
So I want to rephrase what I said earlier. I said I didn't want to talk about AI, but I think a better way, at least for me, is like we need to start thinking of AI.
Ty, I'm going to cut you off, dude. I'm sorry, because I got to run this show, but we're still on that one question. No one, I still got to answer it. So we'll come right back to you, okay? Promise.
Okay, I had my hand raised because I'm trying to pivot, but...
Okay. Okay, gotcha, yeah. So I'll call out for next stuff or going back to that. I don't mean to be a hard ass on here, but it gets real confusing for the listeners if we're, jockeying between a couple questions all at the same time. So look, I'll go. I'm just going to say I'm really looking forward to Dreamforce. Man, I had such a blast last year. It was enjoyable right up until the very last evening where I started to feel like crap. And then I did have COVID and had to hide out in a hotel up in Portland where I was visiting family and friends, and, it put a real damper on the whole holiday. But The conference was fantastic. And, you know, getting to see your friends do sessions, that's always fun. But where I, what I enjoyed most about it, literally, I think, like, aside from like the parties and seeing my friends, spending time with Fred, meeting new people and getting to spend time with new people who eventually became clients was so fun, right? So I, you know, we had the podcast in the park, right? Where I was going around and just asking people questions. Man, I love that. And such a nice different spin on the show to just find out what people loved about the conference and what they're taking away from it and what the biggest surprises were. And then to your point, Fred, the Cercanti live podcast was fun. A lot of the parties are fun. Getting to see the Foo Fighters again, you know, it's always, they're always a good show. But at the end of the day, it's like getting real with some really dope people and just kicking it with them and hanging out, whether you're having a drink or not, right? Like that's the most fun. A lot, making new friends, meeting old, and running into old friends. But you do get to do that at a lot of conferences. So I'll be going to Dreamforce. My hope, like Fred, is to speak again at Florida Dreamin'. And something I'm putting on the map for myself for the year is to attend a world event. You know, maybe go hit up New York or Atlanta. I don't know if I'm going to do a lot of the smaller Dreamin' events unless I'm invited to give some sort of a presentation. So anyway, there you go. I'm kind of curious. I see some familiar faces on here. Feel free to raise your hand if you're listening to the show and you'd like to share your favorite conferences or what you're planning on going to as well. And with that, we're going to go back to Ty. Okay, Ty Zika, go ahead. Pivot point.
So the question was, so if I'm going to go to a conference, if you're going to sell me at a conference, maybe this is reaching out to Salesforce. I don't want to hear AI. I want to hear just the tool, because I think the fatigue I'm getting with it is just help me find the right tool. And it's too easy to pick up tools, especially as like a developer. Every developer wants just like a couple tools to work with. But the tools are diverse in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I had a job where I didn't have to do any Lightning web components for mm-hmm. 2 years, a little bit of Visual Force, a little bit of Aura. But if I'm as a Salesforce developer architect to get into, okay, I got LWC, Aura, Visual Force, Apex, maybe some AWS and some type of AI tool. Developers want to master their tools. So I guess that's what I'm seeking if I'm going
to
look at it.
You got to go to TDX, man. Yeah. I mean, I think for you, TDX, you know, that's what that's for. Like when I look at Salesforce, Dreamforce, I mean, it's trying to be everything to everybody in some way, shape or form, right? But it's not going to be. It's great for guys like me who want to go and see their clients and see their candidates and make new clients and find new candidates and see their friends and hang out. Most of us work from home. And so getting that in-person camaraderie, man, there ain't nothing better than Dreamforce for that. Like, it's awesome. It's so much fun, so much good energy. And you can get a really good high-level view on certain things. But if you're trying to get into best practices, best tools, how to use something, it's TDX all the way, right? That's the technical version of Dreamforce. And I don't know if it's so much like, oh, Salesforce wants you. I mean, you said, if Salesforce wants me to come, then XYZ, right? But the reality is it's like, no, it just is there and people are going to come anyway. So for you, it's like picking the right conference and figuring out specifically what you want to get out of it. Because I can tell you, they're so big. They don't care about you and they don't care about me or anybody else on this show, but they do care about all of us as a collective, if that makes sense. And so there's going to be some of that mass market appeal. And then Dreamforce, Fred, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, a lot of money is spent on Dreamforce to get large clients excited about the platform. What do you think, Fred?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I mean, I think Dreamforce, I mean, I love it. I've been to a bunch, I think 13 Dreamforces, but it is very much a business development conference. It is positioned in the calendar where it is to get deals lined up for Salesforce's year end. It is primarily to get, you know, decision makers and stakeholders in the room and excited about adopting either the platform in general or something new and exciting and sexy on the platform. Yes, there's some learning opportunities, but it's not nearly as deep, especially if you're a developer for TDX. Like TDX, and again, I haven't been to one. My girlfriend's been to a couple, and she's an architect. And, you know, it is in the weeds talking about the tool, really getting hands-on. And I'd also recommend the Dreamer right. conferences. You know, they all have a little bit of different flavor, but again, it's practitioners talking to practitioners. It's not a sales yeah. conference. And I think you'll get a lot more value out of those than you would out of Dreamforce or out of the World Tour events, which are really just little mini 1 day
dreams. Yeah. And I really like, unless you're trying to sell, you know, you're doing client acquisition, there's no need to go to, you know, 10 Dreamit events, right? I mean, they're purposefully designed so that people don't have to spend a lot of money on travel or travel too far or outside their time zone or take a full week and so on. They're generally low cost and local. So if you're in the Chicago area, you just go to the Midwest one, or if it's in Chicago, or you go, if you're in the, you know, Nevada, Northern California, you know, you go to Tahoe Dreamin', right? If you're in Florida or Georgia, you go to Florida Dreamin'. You can drive there. So, you know, just pick one and show up, and then show up again next year too, because that's when those relationships really will cement and you'll get a real sense of it. And you can't go to all the sessions, you know, at any of these things. You only have so many hours and so many days. So pick wisely. And if you can speak, it's all the better. Once you're a speaker, you'll realize a lot more benefits to attending these things than just being what do you call it? Just someone who shows up at a conference. What do you call that? Conference goer?
Attendee. Attendee.
Thank you, Peter.
Anybody can speak. Anybody can speak. I've been to a lot of the Dreamin conferences, and a lot of the sessions I enjoyed the most were first time.
Sure, speakers. Yeah.
So if you have something, you know, that you built that was cool, or if you have a tool that you want to share, or if you have a technique, put something together. You know, the people that sit on those panels that evaluate, they'll give you feedback, you know, and put it out there. If you have any desire to share, Dreamin, I 100% recommend people to submit to the Dreamin conferences, and they're all year long. So there's probably a couple calls for speakers that are open right now.
And we actually have an episode that you can check out on the Salesforce Career Show, regardless of what platform you're on. It was with Janet. So you just search, you know, scroll through and you see the name Janet, grab that one. Because that talks about how to actually get your very first speaking engagement at a Dreamin event or another kind of conference event. So well worth a listen. Oh, and by the way, you know, I got this updated stat thing from Buzzsprout. That's where that's what hosts our podcast, right? And I think in our last show, Fred, I'd said something like we were listened to in over 40 countries last year. The actual number is 80 countries. That's like half of them, I think. How many countries are there? Peter, this seems like something you would know. What are there, like 160? I just looked it up, 195. I was close. I thought 160.
That, I mean, because you looked it up, it must be accurate. But it you know, it changes all the time. But yes, approximately 200.
Yeah, it's from, that's coming from worldometer.com or .info. Worldometer.info.
Well, I mean, everything on the line is legitimate and real.
Definitely real. Right, so. Definitely real.
Yeah, let's get back on track here, Josh. I don't want to be a hard ass, let's keep the show on track.
This is going to turn into the Bill Burr show. Oh, look at this. Look at this. I'm looking at this. What the F?
hey. Okay, come on. Let's get back on track here, folks.
We can do that. So, look, we're trying to do a little bit of an AMA format here today. We've had two questions. Thank you, Ty, and thank you, Rob, for those. If you've got another question, you can go ahead and DM me, or better yet, raise your hand and ask away. Otherwise, we're going to keep this show kind of short. In the meantime, I've got a little message from our sponsor, Salesforce Staffing. That's my company. So the salesforcerecruiter.com, we currently have two brand new openings as of this week. And it's Wednesday. So we've got two new orders this week. They're very interesting. And I think they're kind of complex too. So listen carefully. You're going to want to visit the salesforcerecruiter.com/JOB. We have a new senior lead Salesforce developer position open. It's going to pay quite well. I'm not sure if there are bonuses or not. I can find that out. This is a really neat company. You can live anywhere in the United States, except for like half of them. I think they've got, you know, if you're living in a place where most people are doing Salesforce work, I'm sure that is a state that you could work in. But it's a national company, and what they need is someone who's really strong with AppExchange products. Okay, so you're building something. It's not necessarily for the AppExchange because they host it all themselves, but it's an interesting financial company, investment company, and they need a serious, serious, serious badass who has been there and done that. So if you've worked for a PDO or if you've worked for an ISV, this might be an opportunity of a lifetime. Go ahead and check it out. The other opportunity that we just signed today with a brand new client, they're looking for an individual ideally based in Dallas, the San Francisco Bay Area, or in Miami. And this is a hybrid role, so a couple days in the office. There is some travel, about 25-30%, something like that. They need someone who is a badass, another badass, in Salesforce Field Service. So if you're a senior field service admin or have done field service consulting, you'd be working with some amazing people. There are about 700 people in this company. And if you're actually based in Miami, just about an hour and a half south of me, then you'd get to be in the office with the CEO, who's a heck of a good guy, and got that top level access of a sizable company. I got to spend a lot of time just yesterday with the hiring manager, and who's director of IT. Lovely guy, absolutely lovely guy. And we're interested in talking to you. So if you're interested, go ahead and apply. If you can't do that, then you can hit me up, DM me, preferably email me or text me, and we'll see what we can do about getting you in front of the client. Okay, that's it for the plug. Peter Ganza, go for it.
Okay, I know everybody, including me, that has seen that picture floating around LinkedIn and Twitter is just dying to know, is that the first time you've done the Tom Selleck 80s stash? Because it's just fucking awesome. You kill it.
Thanks, buddy. No, this is my first real mustache. I guess I've had beards.
You got to post a picture in the comments or something. Or maybe yeah. Because if anybody has.
Let's see. How do I even do that? Oh, I can go to comments and then add another post, photo, and there we go, and add. Post. So yeah, that's me with a stash. I started growing it the start of November. I grew a beard, and then my chin and jowls are all like really dark and really gray with like sort of these big gray stripes. I look like a rabbi. So I was like, I'm shaving that. And what was left is the sort of, you know, Selleck stash. But yeah, man. Now, it looks like we got some other questions here, so let me grab those. Oh, yeah. What career will AI end first, developers or MBAs? Ooh, I like that. Gentlemen, ladies, what do you guys think?
So, yeah, I'll go ahead because I always have an opinion. I think the question is bad. You know, MBA is not a career. MBA is a designation of which a number of careers can fall under. I'd say the same thing for developer. But I think that there are roles that developers play and roles that MBAs play that are more susceptible to being eliminated by AI. If I'm an MBA holder and I'm in the lower ranks at an investment bank or private equity firm, I'm primarily doing spreadsheet analysis. My days are probably numbered, or at least the firms, you know, are always going to need to recruit talent from the bottom to move up. And that job is going to change, you know, if you're an entry-level analyst in those firms to be less of a spreadsheet junkie. I think same thing for developers. I think, you know, if you're a developer that is primarily doing QA work, if your developer that's primarily doing tweaks to existing well-documented object-oriented language programs, a lot of that volume is probably going to go away. If you're more of an architect, if you're working with a language that's a little bit more archaic, if you have some specialization in, you know, certain types of technology, certain integration patterns, certain middle and back end systems in different industries, that specialized knowledge is probably a little bit safer. So I think that the more rote your role is, the more repetitive it is, the more at risk you are, whether you're wearing a business suit or wearing a developer hoodie.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this happened when factories, robots came into factories, right? When there was all of a sudden you could have a camera and a torque meter to tell whether or not the screw was put into the right spot, which screw it was, and how much torque to apply for, you know, whatever, to keep the car door on, right? So, but now people have to build those machines, right? And design them and create the software for them. And I think AI is going to be one of those things where, I mean, by the way, I'm in full agreement that the more rote your job is, the more likely it is to go away, right? But there will always be additional jobs to support the industry that is actually the industry that is supplanting certain jobs, right? So, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out that the most rote jobs require the least amount of intelligence. And yeah, that's going to be likely some sort of a problem. But meanwhile, we've got these other problems in the United States where we can't get enough manual labor. You know, there aren't enough pilots. There aren't enough psychotherapists and psychiatrists. There aren't enough roofers. There aren't enough plumbers. There aren't enough doctors. There aren't enough nurses. Right, some of these require significant education, and some of these don't require almost anything. You just got to show up with some boots on, right? And so there's always going to be a career out there for anyone. You just have to figure out, are you, you know, bright enough or determined enough to acquire the skill sets for the less rote positions? And if the answer is no, well, you're set, man, because there's jobs galore. You know, from blue collar, brown collar labor all the way up. You know, there's just a high demand for hiring right now. I thought it was a good question and I kind of got it, right? You know, it's sort of like engineers versus people who are more focused on business. But I think that this question came from a report regarding the new generation, whatever that is. And it's belief is that there will be fewer MBAs and more engineers. Of course, it's not like colleges are getting the best rap these days, are they? You know, I mean, pipe up, guys. Feel free to jump in. You don't have to raise your hand for this.
No, that's true. And here's the thing, right? Like MBA has never been, is going to be a controversial statement probably, it's never been about what you learn in the classroom. It's about the network you build from the people that you're going through the learning experience with, and the people that went to that school before you. That's why people get MBAs. They don't get MBAs to learn the content and the
content. I disagree. I disagree. Totally. But I'll come back to that.
I was the one who posted that question, and it came from this guy named George Hotz. Josh, can I post his tweet?
Yeah, go for it.
This guy, George Hotz, he was like one of the first guys to hack the iPhone, and he's in San Diego. He's actually the reason I was able to talk to Elon Musk on a Twitter, on an X base. So I feel like this guy is in the end. X hired him to fix their code and stuff. But anyways, this jumbo tweet here, he's trying to start a consultancy where it's more engineers, less MBAs. And they're kind of poking fun at some current consultancies. And has anyone seen that content of people kind of making fun of certain consultancies?
I haven't seen that, but I don't peruse that stuff very much.
I say as a former consultant that's been at several of the large consulting firms, I may or may not have circulated quite a bit of that content.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyways, though, he brings up MBAs versus engineers. That's what made me prompt the question.
Yeah.
But an MBA is not, I mean, MBA is great, but there's so much more to being successful. And I'll just give one example, if you don't mind, Josh. My first job, I mean, I was building computers for my pops, whatever. But my first actual job was at Symantec, tech support, WinFax, TalkWorks. Let's not go there. That's a separate podcast. But I think maybe a year or two in, I was training new hires, right? And there was this older gentleman, I'll call him because he was clearly a decade, maybe two older than me, who had a triple PhDs and a freaking MBA. And, you know, here he is sitting in, tech support training. And yeah, he was super smart, but he wasn't successful even at tech support because he just didn't have that drive, that personality. Even though he had all these, he could get through the MBA, and I know that's quite difficult. It's not just about the MBA. There's other things that are important as well, or you simply won't be successful.
Yeah, it's. I mean, those are all good points, Peter. Look, if it was just for the network, people would just go to their Toastmasters. You know what I mean, or whatever. Like, I get it. There's a cost to it, and there's a time cost to it. And therefore, that creates automatically, you know, exclusivity and scarcity, right? So I agree with you, Fred, 100% that, yeah, like, it's massive benefit for the network. But where it really shines is your general marketability, right? I mean, MBAs don't sit on the sidelines for too long compared to people with, you know, BAs and BS degrees. They just, like, they get snatched up pretty quickly. Oftentimes, it's a requirement to even get advancement in an organization into senior leadership that you have that. And why? Well, it's not just because of your network, right? We've got LinkedIn now. You know, it's pretty easy to find people and connect with people. I don't think it's that hard, you know. But an MBA teaches business fundamentals. You know, leadership, communication, critical thinking, analytical skills, and you get real practice on that. Now, some MBA programs are better than others, right? If you're going to an online school only, like what is that, Southern Illinois or Phoenix or something like that? I mean, even there, I think you're still doing some group projects together and group activities, but for the most part, it's not like going, you know, into class. And so, you know, remote education has replaced night school. You guys remember that? Remember in the 90s, right? I think that's when they died. But people would go to night school for their MBAs. And now what do? They, you know, log on from their desk at their house where they're probably working already. So it's great for marketability. I'll tell you that as a business owner, I have run into situations time and time again where I really wished I'd had the experience and the education of an MBA. Yes, I can Google stuff, right? But it ain't the same. And I know it's not the same because once you have that MBA, to Fred's point, then you're often you're going to these consulting firms and you're getting real world hands-on experience multiple times with multiple clients, with serious problems or serious issues, big implementations and what have you. So the MBA gets you the additional experience. Now, I don't have any of that. None of it. I still got to be a VP at a Fortune 500, but it's not like I was the shot caller, you know, for hundreds of people, because I wasn't, right? So that's why I employ people with MBAs and people who have, you know, contribute to those types of programs, because they can help me in massive, significant ways to deliver better results for our clients. And that's what we all want. So Fred, I'm going to kick it back to you since I've said my piece now.
No, I hear you. And I think, like, you know, I came out of the gate with a pretty bombastic statement, but I agree that, you know, there's other ways to build a network, but the network you get out of going to a university program, and I mean a traditional MBA program, is very different. And it is, in a way, to your point, you know, kind of a union card for white collar, you know, work and for executive white collar work. And you're right. It's a good filter, right? If I've got two candidates and they're otherwise really great and they need to filter, you know, there's one has an MBA and one doesn't, it can be a deciding factor. But I think that, you know, an MBA degree, as far as like what you actually get in the classroom, the actual academic learning of it is far less valuable than hard sciences, which I would include development. You know, when you're getting a degree, a technical degree, you're learning something that is much more difficult, requires more practice than what you learn in an MBA program.
Well, sure. But don't you think, Fred, that people are like, there are people who are born and they're going to get an MBA and never go seek an engineering degree, right?
Totally.
And vice versa. It's sort of like, well, how many people are scientifically minded or developer code minded? How many people can actually handle symbolic language, right? Or handle 12-hour shifts sitting at a desk, you know, coding,
yep.
Right? Like, it's a totally different kind of person. I don't think it's a choice. I think the choice is made for you upon birth, for the most part, plus exposure, right?
I'm certainly not suggesting it's a choice. I think what I'm suggesting is that the structure of a formal program benefits people that are more technical more than people that are doing something like business.
Hmm. I see. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Ty, you've got your hand up, and then we've got another question to ask. Go for it.
I nerded out on prompt engineering for a few months. Have you heard of prompt engineering?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or anyone else?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Some people have said it's just like a fluke, and it's some people are really serious. And I'm happy to hear you mention symbolic language. And we've Peter mentioned there was a gentleman who had a bunch of degrees but couldn't communicate well. And then Josh, you mentioned the MBA experience is valuable. So there, I'm just trying to bridge, like, okay, what can I take from you, Josh? What can I take from you, Peter? And
sure.
The bridge I'm coming to is there's some sense of communication you get from a college experience, and there's other communication style that you don't get, the street communication. And I guess I'm just trying to maybe see if that's where just getting really becoming a prompt engineer, maybe that's what needs to happen to bridge these two parties.
So real quick, just to let you know, my story tie was from 1998. So keep that in mind.
Okay. We got a big fist bump from Ty there. Yeah. It's look, I'll just go back to what I was sharing with Fred. I think we're kind of born into what, you know, we're born with proclivities, talents and interests. And I'm not making this shit up. Like, this is a fact, right? Some people are relationship socially minded. Some people are into things. The majority of men are into things. And the majority of women are into people and relationships, okay? That's a fact, and it's indisputable. Like, you cannot, you know, there's going to be outliers, and it's not everyone, right? But majority, that just means 51% or more, okay? And we talked about this, I think, about 5 or 6 months ago, just for a little bit. So just starting with the things versus people, and by the way, can you guess what I am? I'm a man, but I'm more interested in people. And that's why I work in an industry that is dominated by females, right?
Sorry, Josh, does Ty know what degree you got?
Art. I was an art major. I studied painting and drawing and fine art. I play a lot of music. I don't really paint or draw anymore, but it runs in the family and my kids both do that stuff. So yeah, all our kids do that. So actually, all of our kids between Casey and me, they're all creative in one way, shape or form. So yeah, man. I mean, I just think like you come out how you come out, and then you just get exposure, and then I also have a quality of tenacity or stick-to-itiveness, right? And then that will partially determine beyond your intellect how far you're going to go, right? Because the person who's got tenacity plus intellect can accomplish an MBA, and someone can have the intellect and not the tenacity, and they'll never finish their degree, you know, barring other, you know, life situations that happen that come out of the blue, health issues, accidents, and things of that nature, right? But for the most part, if nothing else is standing in your way, then the only thing standing in your way is you. Would you guys agree?
Yeah. And actually, I was just going to suggest to Ty, listen to my podcast. I'm not trying to, say anything about myself, but I talk about a lot of these things. I bounced around, right? And just ended up wherever the world took me. And all the things that, you know, Josh has been talking about, okay, put aside the MBA stuff. I never got a degree, but I think for where you are right now, there might be some useful tidbits in there.
Yeah. And Peter, when you say your podcast, you mean your episode. Is that right?
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing out on some awesome podcast that you were running. So
Nope.
Yeah. So that you can go back. I think it's two or three episodes and you'll have Peter Ganza's episode there that he's referring to. All right. We've got one more question and then we'll wrap up the show.
It sounds great.
Okay. Well, the question comes from our friend who's listening right now. Hey guys, how lucrative do you think Salesforce Marketing Cloud is in terms of opportunities? Good question. I like it. Who wants to take this first? Anyone? Not, I'll jump right in. No? Okay. Well, I guess it's me. So look, I'll just say this. Anything is going to be lucrative if you go far enough down the field, if you make yourself exceptional, right? For the folks that we've placed in Marketing Cloud positions, there's such a massive jump in compensation from, say like email specialist to architect. You know, it's double. You get twice as much, right? And I'd say the same thing goes with Salesforce administrators compared to Salesforce architects. You know, all things being equal, roughly, yeah, you're going to make about double, maybe even a little bit more. So Marketing Cloud is a perfectly viable field to go into and deep dive, but only if you love it, right? Only if you really enjoy the work, only if you feel good about what you're doing, if you feel like, yeah, I want to be able to, you know, whatever, deliver messages for clients, you know, that are better and help them learn and have good intelligent data around it and this kind of stuff to help them sell more stuff, like, then that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. Go for it if you like that. It's definitely different than being, say, a Salesforce admin. Is it lucrative? Look, I don't think being like a general Marketing Cloud person pays a ton. It probably pays the average, at least here in the United States. So, you know, somewhere in the 70s, right? Which is pretty much like average household income right now in 2024, 23, 24, right? So you're going to make a good average wage. You won't be pumping gas. You won't be pulling espressos, you know, and you can have a nice career. But if you push it, you can start to make $200,000, $300,000 a year by being a badass architect in Marketing Cloud, for sure. So if you're going to go, my recommendation for everyone is just go as far as you can and consume as much as you can, because there is a timeline here, you know, from birth to death, and you want to accelerate things as fast as possible in your early days so that you can have a longer career that's a well-paying career. So those are my thoughts. Fred, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I'll say that the part I'll agree with the most is you've got to pick something that you're going to enjoy doing. And you've got to pick a specialization if you really want to make some money. And the reason why Marketing Cloud might be a good place to specialize is a couple of things. One is there's a lot of complexity in the product set. You know, Marketing Cloud is not just one thing. There's a lot of different licenses in there. And each of those products has come together from acquisition. And so they all work a little bit differently. So it's very difficult to find somebody that knows all the Marketing Cloud. So if you want to be, you know, an Interaction Studio specialist, you want to be a Data Cloud specialist, or, you know, there's a lot of room to specialize and get really deep in a couple of product sets. I also think that marketing, you know, tends to always find budget that you don't necessarily find in other parts of companies. And so I think that from a demand perspective, whether you're on the consulting side or whether you're in-house, you know, there tends to always be, you know, a different budget you're hitting for marketing than you are for necessarily other IT spend. I also think that there is opportunity in Marketing Cloud to both be on the build side and the run side. So if you enjoy marketing execution, you can have a career in marketing that is not just implementation, that I think is, you know, different than what you see on the Salesforce side. But I'm a big Marketing Cloud fan, a big, you know, advocate of marketing technology in general. And again, if it's not your thing, don't force it just to make money. But if it's something you're attracted to, I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, good points, my friend. Definitely good points. Look, I think another advantage, and you brought it up, Fred, a little bit, is there's a lot more Salesforce admins out there than there are Marketing Cloud pros. So, you know, there's going to be fewer opportunities for you, but there are also fewer candidates for that role, if that makes sense. And that means that you're competing with fewer people for those roles, right? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So something to think about. Good question. And if we don't have any other questions, I think we're going to put a pin in this thing, which has been going for an hour and 15 minutes. That's pretty good for a off-the-cuff little Ask Us Anything kind of show. So thank you, everybody. Thank you to Ty Zika. Thank you to Fred. Thank you to Peter Ganza for your insights. Thanks to our friends like Casey and Rob and Cheesecake Larry, who've joined us today, and Ogunmolo. Thank you for joining the show and for such an excellent question as well. We're going to be back next week. Isn't that weird? We're actually going to do two, possibly three shows in a row. We usually just do one every other week, but the schedule got kind of screwy, so we will be back next week. And we're fortunate to have a data visualization enablement and fluency leader, a 2X Tableau visionary and 4X Tableau ambassador, Adam Maiko, is going to be joining us, a special, very special guest for us. We've never had a guest who specializes in Tableau, so this is going to be an All Things Tableau episode. He's also a Golden Hoodie recipient from 2022, and a Tableau Next founder and an author as well. So join us with me, Vanessa, Adam Maiko, and then the rest of the crew, including Fred, Peter, and other friends of ours that join us regularly. We thank you. And we welcome you to this new year. I think that it's going to be absolutely incredible. I don't think I gave my predictions on the last show, but I think it's going to be a stellar year for hiring. I think it's going to be a great year for everyone's careers. I think it's going to be weird. It's going to be interesting. It's going to have some nuance. That's not going to be a big surprise, right? But there's no time like now to get a grip on where you want to go. If you haven't done it yet, write it down. Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to make? Who do you want to work for? Who do you want to support? What kind of relationships do you want to have this year? What kind of relationships with your boss? What kind of meetings do you want to have, right, Ty? What kind of, you know, efficiency things can you add in this month that will last you not just this month, but this year and a lifetime? How can you improve? Whatever it is, you know, I was talking to my son earlier today, and he needs help improving his sleep. We spent 45 minutes. I think we figured it out. We'll know in a few days, right? So figuring out all of these things that are going to give you more energy, give you more intellectual power, give you more focus, give you more drive, all of those things, you can have them. You just got to carve out what's most important, make a plan around it, and you can do it right now. And you touch any of those things, improve any of those areas, I promise you, your career will also improve. So that's all I've got to say for now. We missed Vanessa today. She'll be back next week. Everybody, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.